Okey, selamünaleyküm, görüşürüz. What I'd like to do at this point, with your permission, is to begin a new, not a full new series, but a new project. The Choyves Halvavas Shar Cheshbon HaNefesh, the 30 Cheshbonos of the Choyves Halvavas, which in a way actually encapsulate the Sefer, meaning we'll call it a way of getting an overview of the entire Sefer Choyves Halvavas in a comprehensive way. The essence of Shaar Cheshbon HaNefesh is Choyves Halvavas wants to train us to think into our lives. That's basically what Cheshbon HaNefesh is. He's expanding the term Cheshbon HaNefesh from the way we usually use it. Usually, when we use the word today, when we use the word Cheshbon HaNefesh in terms of the terminology as developed in the Olam HaMusar and the Olam of Chassidus, what it means is to be taking a personal accounting. What have I done throughout the day? What have I done right? What have I done wrong? What do I need to improve? The Choyves HaLevavos is retroactively, as in about 1,000 years earlier, expanding the idea to mean Cheshbon HaNefesh means let me get perspective of myself and of my place in the world and of my place in life in general. Let me get perspective of life in general. And he wants to train us to think in all kinds of directions. So to this end, he gives us 30 samples of perspectives to consider. The common denominator of it is that they're all meant to prompt us to grow, to make more of ourselves, and to grow further in life. But actually, even though these are samples, he says, let me give you an example of directions you can think of. And then he gives 30 of them. Those 30 really constitute a certain sub-sefer in their own right that's very, very profound. It's been recognized as a area of study in its own right. There are some who take the approach of, let's learn one every month. And then I've heard others who say, one every month, that's much too, wait, sorry, 30, one every day of the month, go through it throughout the month. And then I've heard others who say, 30, you can go through all 30, one a day throughout the month. That's much too fast. Whatever it is, the common denominator being that we're recognizing the very great value of these 30 cheshbonos in terms of giving us a very comprehensive Choyves HaLevavos perspective on ourselves and our place in the world and in where we want to get ourselves. So I'd like to take to move into this project. I imagine that in our case, it will certainly be, in a general way, on average, be less than one each time. But let's see. So, again, with your permission, we'll start. And as usual, if you want, we can actually bring Sfarim up next time, but you don't need a sefer. You'll be fine without. So the Choyves HaLevavos says as follows. This is Shaar Cheshbon HaNefesh, Perek Gimel. And he says as follows. Aval al kama panim ye cheshbon ha'adam im nafshelei likim yis'aleh. What types, he's talking about, this is basically making a cheshbon, a perspective of you and Hashem, and getting perspective on where you stand with Hashem. So he says, how does that work? So we'll say it as follows. There are very many different angles you can approach this from. I'll give 30 examples. And these will give you a very good perspective on your obligation toward Hashem. If you really internalize them, and if you actually make it a commitment to constantly be thinking into these 30 perspectives that we're about to get. So he's actually recommending, this Kari Sam Tamid, use these 30 as a project of constant review. Okay, so we'll begin. The first four are very, well, Choyvus Halvavus like, in terms of appreciation. And he does it in the form of a buildup. See what Hashem did with you. But he does it in the form of a buildup. So perspective number one is, Harishai, number one is, look at yourself. The way I think of this is, well, his words are, think of when you first appeared on the scene, when you went from being non-existent to existent, when you went from being nothing to when you went from being to being something. The way I think of this is, if you will, there's a Dr. Seuss birthday book. Everybody's familiar with Dr. Seuss, I imagine. But there's a Dr. Seuss birthday book. And Dr. Seuss in his very zany style. But he says that what's so great about a birthday is that you could have been an isn't. And then if you know his, you could have been an isn't. An isn't. And if you know his style, there's a big picture of an isn't, a very big, elaborate, embellished picture of what an isn't looks like. And he says, you could have been an isn't. And this is basically what the Chovas HaLevavos is telling you now. Realize that you could have been an isn't. And then Hashem just decided, think about the moment that you suddenly came into being. At that point, according to my very lay understanding, you're about a 2,500th of an inch when you first came into being. That's the size that a person began at, and as a cell. Now, this was not because Hashem owed you anything. Before you existed, Hashem owed you nothing. But Hashem decided he wanted to have a you. You didn't exist, but yet Hashem was picturing you and envisioning you, and you were something important to Hashem. Not because you did anything to earn it before you existed. It was simply Hashem's goodness. Hashem decided, I want a you that I can do good with. And therefore, he put you into existence. Now, it goes further than that, because most beings that Hashem brings into existence, it's only a very rare minority that are actually chosen to be humans. We don't even think of those terms, but we're going back to appreciation. He wants you to go all the way back, all the way back. First of all, the fact that you exist. But second of all, you were actually chosen to be a human being. Most beings that were brought into existence are not. In fact, the vast majority of living beings aren't even mammals, they're insects. So the higher odds were that you would be an insect, but you were one of the lucky winners of a lottery of a rare few who not only wouldn't be an insect, would be a higher form of life. I don't know if you're allowed to say that today. They're politically correct, I don't know. But to be a higher form of life, but not only that, to actually be a human being.
Mockery, was it?
No, it wasn't the lottery. That was a form of speech. But the point is that it was certainly a very rare privilege among all the rest of life. And therefore he says, Yira b'sichlai, take note of the fact, ki hu chashuv b'inyanai, that Hashem gave you the most prestigious form of existence, the highest form of existence. See, when we're trying to figure out if we need to be grateful, we generally look around at the people immediately around us, and the 10 neighbors that I know, and I stop measuring myself up. He said, wait, 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 wait. while you're measuring yourself up against the neighbors. You have to take into the equation the cats right outside your house. You have to take into equation the ants on your counter. And of all those, excuse me if I offended you, and all those, this is what you have to take into account when you are measuring up the level of gratitude and appreciation you should be having. You know that, like fleas, the ones that you just kind of try to avoid letting them get in your eye, they exist for about, like, to my understanding, like for 24 to 20, 48 hours. And you are of a much more quality constitution, the way your body is built. You're given a much higher standing over animal life, over plant life, and certainly over inanimate objects. And this places on you a debt of gratitude. I heard Rabbi Tetz once say that there's a, like, again, like we said before, when you stop thinking in terms of appreciation, we're jumping ahead many steps. How much money do I have? What kind of house do I have? What kind of luxuries do I have? And we gloss over some of the most fundamental elements that many others would be envious to have. The first of them, like we said before, is existence, life. So I heard Rabbi Tatz once say that is, the game called Russian roulette, roulette, however you pronounce it, which basically, you take a revolver and there's six or eight bullets in the barrel, and you put one bullet in, spin it around, they spin it around, and then they hold the gun to their head and they shoot. So I don't know anybody who plays this game. Baruch Hashem, it's not in my circles. But apparently, there was some sort of thrill in doing this. And he said, "What is the thrill? What makes people do this crazy thing?" He said, "They can't put a finger on it. They can't put a finger on it. But the thrill is, it's the fun of being alive. Just generally, we don't experience the fun of being alive because we're busy with the next step." But he says that they can't put a finger on this. But it's that thrill. The exhilaration of after you heard the click and I'm still here. It's an exhilarating feeling. The feeling of being alive when you could have not been alive. And wow, I can actually go forward with lunch. He said it in another way. So that's the thrill of some of the crazy daredevil things that people are doing. Again, without being able to put a finger on it, but these crazy. Now, these sky jumping and all these kinds of wild things. He said the thrill of it is that afterwards you say, I'm alive. It's just exhilarating. It's thrilling. So people who are able to really get into the Chovas HaLevavos world are able to really enhance the pleasure of life by being able to do this without playing Russian roulette, by being able to do this just by being able to experience the thrill of being alive. Oh, Avigdor Miller used to talk about this. This was a living example. If you think that all these things in the Chovas HaLevavos, these levels of appreciation are not just beyond people's capacity today. So he showed that that's not so. He really lived with that appreciation and pleasure, the enhanced quality of life. We're talking Gashmias here, which intertwines with Ruchnias. Kuzari makes a big deal about this Chovas HaLevavos. That it actually enhances your quality of life when you can really enjoy the fun of just being alive because you realize that it's not a given.
That's always used to say, you come in this world already behind the eight ball because we didn't do anything to deserve to be alive, to have eyes that work this or that. And so, like, there's no way we could repay Hashem for even for our existence. But people forget that you take it for granted. And then when the bump comes along, you're like, what did I do to deserve that? But you don't think about what did I do to deserve to be born, for example.
Right.
Which was nothing.
This is right. That's exactly the point. That's exactly the point. People suddenly encounter Hashem. And this is really the whole brain surgery that the Chovas HaLevavos is trying to do here. People suddenly discover Hashem, and chas v'shalom, something goes wrong. All of a sudden Hashem did something. They never met him before in their life. And a way we might say is, if you picture a person walking with his hand behind his back like this, okay, and Hashem is busy putting things in the whole time, and he's moving through. Whenever he needs something, he sticks his hand behind his back and takes it. And all of a sudden, 1 minute, he feels it. 1 minute, there's nothing there right now. He suddenly turns around and says, "Hashem, why'd you suddenly do that? I've been getting things the whole time, but that's never felt."
But that's the prophets we say every single morning when I said no way of Korach. I said, for all the prophets that we say, we thank you,
Beautiful.
HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's all.
Beautiful.
That's
That's
all
exactly
coming.
the training that Chazal are trying to put us through with the Birkas HaShachar. Exactly. To take all the things that are just inherent parts of life, those are not the fun things of life, but to take a step back and say, no, this is the fun of life. That, yeah, yep. Yeah. The ability to think, right? That's the first Hanoisana, Shanosana Sakrivina. The ability to see clothing, etc. Yes. So now he goes on and says, V'imashal b'zeh mashal korev. Now think of it in terms of the following mashal. Yale b'machshavtoi, try to consider, ilu be'es yan kusoi, hishlicha tu imoy b'mesila. Let's say you have a child who, when he was born, as a tiny infant, his mother abandoned him at the side of the road. He's lying there as an infant. And someone walked by and saw this helpless baby lying on the side of the road. The chomalala felt bad for the child. The osafoisoyel, so he gathered him into his home. Begiduloi, and he dedicated himself to this child's. To raising this child, Adasha Godal Vihiskil, until the child grew up and is now an intelligent young man. Okay? So, can we describe the level of obligation that this boy has to this man? How dedicated he has to be to him? The Kolashe Yitzaveu boy, and wouldn't he have to be that much more dedicated to anything that this person would ask of him or tell him not to do? Owes him everything. And that much more when we consider all the obligations that we have toward Hashem in terms of Hashem's protection. And Hashem is busy providing you all the time with everything you need. So that much more, you have to feel that dedication, that commitment toward Hashem, and to feel that your life is just one project of indebtedness to Him, of commitment to Him. So this is level number one. Of appreciating, living, and experiencing the chesed that we're getting from Hashem. I'll bring this out from two more angles. Anybody know what it feels like to be created? I don't remember. But there was only one person, I don't know, maybe Chava, maybe two, who really experienced what it feels like to suddenly be when a minute ago you weren't. It was Adam HaRishon, and maybe Chava also. Maybe it was two people. I'm not sure how exactly it worked with Chava. But Adam HaRishon was created as an adult with full understanding. Can you try to imagine the experience of coming into being, fully understanding what's happening, and 10 seconds ago you weren't? Okay. What does that feel like? I don't know what it feels like. I can only imagine that it's an awesome experience. Awesome in the way they used it like more than 40 years ago. But the Maharal says a very powerful point. He says, what is the first thing a person does? Yes, the Maharal knew this. I don't know. But what is the first thing a person does when he suddenly experiences that? What was the first thing Adam HaRishon did? So he says something very, very amazing. He says, the first thing he does is he looks to see who did it. Meaning, when a person suddenly feels himself coming into being, it's more than just that he suddenly is, but he actually feels that someone just did that. He feels that he was just actively created. I don't know. I can't describe this. I mean, we try to imagine this, but it's like, we'll just give like a mushel is if you suddenly see food appear on your plate, it's one thing. But when it's very clear that someone just threw it, you experience that. So it was very clear that he just felt someone just made him. So the first thing he instinctively did was look to find him, seek him out. How's that relevant to us? And this is where we can really tie in what the Chavos HaVavos is saying in a very powerful way. The Maharal says that is the depth behind the halacha, that you're not allowed to engage in personal material activities before davening. Okay, with women the rules are different, but the concept is there also, and also with women it applies to a level. Whatever the case is, the halacha is you're not allowed to engage in material activities. You're not allowed to start going about your business and needs before you daven. First thing you do is daven. The Maharal says it's exactly this point. You were just created anew. The first thing you do is like Adam Arishon. You turn around to find the one who did it and connect with him. Who just did that? You seek him out. So we turn to him in tefillah. Okay. Okay, brings a few psukim to this effect. Okay. So that's number one. That's number one. Level number one, he's saying we're going to back up and talk about appreciation. So level number one is first to appreciate the fact that you exist. That's number one. And that's a privilege that was granted to you. It's not a given. You didn't have to exist. Hashem owed you nothing. Hashem could have left you in unexistence. And there are many, many more people who are non-existent.
Is it?
Isn't. A lot of isn'ts out there. And number two is that you were actually given the privilege of existing as a human being. Another rare privilege to appreciate. And think about it in those terms. Think about it in those terms about next time before you swat the flea away, look at it for a minute and say, wow, why am I me and he's him? And be awed by that. Be awed by that.
Also, being a Jew is well,
Oh,
another
good.
level.
That's right. So here we're starting to build it up. We're starting to build it up. This is classic Chavos HaVavos, methodical, one layer at a time. So what's next? Layer number two. Okay, now that you are actually given that status as of human, Chesh now take it to the next step and say, the look at the great chesed that Hashem did with me. He decided to make me a human, and now as a human, look at the perfect body he gave me. Look at this astounding machine in terms of your constitution, not just your constitution in general, but each one of your different limbs and organs. There's a whole system and machine that he gave you, a perfect one of this, and a perfect one of this, and a perfect one of this. The way I try to bring it home to myself is that you know, you talk about, let's say we talk about eyes. Eyes, everyone here has working eyes, I think, and two of them. But not everybody does. In fact, we look around and we saw pretty much everyone, most people around have eyes, so we don't think of that as some special privilege, but not everybody does. And I remember I was once talking about this, and I talked about you got not only one, but two. Someone came over to me after the shiur and said to me, I only got one. And he pointed out to me that he actually has a one of his eyes was glass. So yes, it's not everyone. So if you try to think of it in these terms, it's a little bit you know, illustrative purposes only, but this is the idea. Imagine you are standing in line with a whole bunch of other neshamas or whatever it is, you're ready to get your body. And Hashem is handing out eyes. Hashem says, you get one, another one. You get two, and then someone, no, you're not going to be able to have. Then you'll have other things, but eyes, I'm sorry, you're not going to be able to have. And then as you approached, Hashem looked at you. Okay, two. You'll get two. And to take it personally. I mean, not to think, okay, wholesale, that's the way the system works wholesale. But no, but to take it personally, it's a personal decision. When Hashem was planning you, he decided you're going to have not only one working eye, but two of them. To take that personally. And we go on further than that. Well, some of the most harrowing experiences in your life is also something that we don't remember. The process of the birth coming out as it ought to be. This is Hashem guiding it along. And Hashem, busy with your nutrition, your diet, both before you came out of the womb and afterwards, different systems in place for in the womb, and then a different system in place for out of the womb of how food is produced. I'm Sadia Gain said that if you think about it, the world is one massive food factory. All the forces of nature are working in collaboration to produce immense quantities of food every day. According to what you needed, which is again something to take personally as an individual chesed that Hashem said, I'm going to be providing you with this. Think to yourself. Have people who, when they're first created, they arrive with bliyei naim. Have a person who arrives without eyes, yadayim without hands, raglayim without feet. Think about a person who, let's say, a person wasn't created without hands or without feet, but a person whose eyes, eye, hands, hand or hand, feet, foot or feet. Or some other body part is in danger. How much money would a surgery at a top specialist cost to save a person's legs? How much would a person be willing to pay for that? How much would a person be willing to pay people who are living on dialysis? How much would a person be willing to pay to get a pair of functioning kidneys? And you think about all these different things, think in terms of money. It would be interesting to actually research, but all these things could easily be in the $100,000 realm. Save eyes to save. And you think to yourself, I have all these things. These are very, very valuable, just money-wise. Very valuable machines. And I'm equipped with another extremely expensive luxury. It makes life so pleasant. And another one, and another one, and another one. So he says, imagine if a person was without one of these things, via and if some person was able to actually provide you with it, gufay until his body would be complete.
He could live, but he still has to thank Hashem for what he has.
Oh, so saying even a person who is lacking it has a lot to thank for. And certainly the person who's not lacking it. And imagine if you have the person who can actually provide this for you. How dedicated and indebted you would feel to that person for your whole life. So kafize. So this is the level at which you should be drawn after Hashem. He gave you one gift and another gift on a personal level and another gift, two working arms. And each arm comes with a whole set of working fingers. And there's something else very convenient. The elbow is a very convenient thing. If you think about it, how much smoother it makes life. One time I was trying to do a Victor Miller exercise. I used to walk from yeshiva when I was learning in Mary. I used to walk home. It was a nice long walk. I used to do a dafka for health. I decided, you know what, I'm going to try to focus on one of my body's conveniences. Not the most vital thing, knees. Knees. And for one period, it was a long walk home. Part of it was along the highway of Kvish Ramot. We lived in Ramot. And for part of the way, probably looked weird. I would try to what the experience is without having knees that bend. Okay. And you know what? It's not comfortable. It's not comfortable. Knees are a very convenient and comfortable thing to have. Imagine, okay, it's one thing is walking. Imagine when you sit down to eat. Okay, you have to have people staggered, right? One person here and then the next one there and the next one there, right? Just picture it's very neat, first of all, for walking to be able to like just fold underneath you when you don't want to be taking up too much space. So all of these things are things that Hashem pampered us with, and to experience his care in these different things. And here we see quotes David HaMelech's Prakim of Iyov and David HaMelech were both describing how Hashem formed them, all the details of Hashem making them into what they are, just in the very simple physical sense. So that's layer number two. First of all, you were chosen to exist and to be a human. And on top of that, you were given a working body. I just can't help, but it's not really connected. But I've heard, I think Shlomo Shadron said it, it's Kabbalah. If a story pops into his head, has some sort of faint connection, you just say it. But the Panovitcher Rav once told him, Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, he disclosed to him that he has only one kidney. So Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was startled. So everybody's familiar with a little bit with the story of the Panovitcher Rav. This was the man who, the ambition, just building Torah when it looked like there was nothing to do, and just unbounded dedication to building Torah in, you know, in fantastic, fantastic as in fantasy kind of ways. It was to the extent that when he made the groundbreaking for the Panovitch Yeshiva, which started with something like six Talmidim, and he made the huge building on the top of the mountain, and he was talking about that he hears the voices of hundreds of people learning Torah. His story was that he had come from Lithuania on a mission from the Lithuanian government when World War II broke out. He was in Israel, and he already couldn't get back. His whole family was killed, and he suddenly found himself with no family, no home, no standing of any kind, and he threw himself into building. He said, "If that's what's happening there, then we have to start rebuilding here." And when he made that speech at the groundbreaking of Panovich, there was one of the other Choshev Rabbonim there who said, he's listening to the talk, and he said, "Nebuch, the war affected his mind. He's delirious." But whatever the case is, so he told him Shlomo Zalman at one point that he only has one kidney. So Shlomo Zalman was a little startled. So the Panovitcher Rav said to him with his classic wit, he said to him, "Why are you startled? It's a great thing." He said, "It says in the Gemara that kidneys provide counsel." So he said, "My one kidney said to me, Yasale," his name was Rabbi Yosef Shlomo. He said, "My one kidney said to me, Yasale, go build a yeshiva for hundreds of people." He said, "Had I had balance, had I had my other kidney to balance things out, it would have said, Yasale, are you crazy?" He said, "But my other kidney wasn't there. And that's why I did what I did." Okay, we'll stop here. We have a quest. Two questions. One question. Maybe the closest we can come is waking up in the morning or near-death experiences. Okay. So the truth is, near-death experiences certainly do that for a person in terms of appreciating life. But our point here is that yes, Chalila, if a person is in such a situation. Well, I don't say Chalila, a near-death experience. I think it was what Savta Beck used to say. My grandmother used to say, better to say I was almost killed than I was almost really rich, right? Something like that. But whatever the case is, certainly if a person is in such an experience, you want to utilize for that purpose. But what the Chavos HaLevavos is trying to do is bring us to a place where we don't have to come to that, meaning. Waking up in the morning is certainly, as we've been saying, it's a time to appreciate that. And Chazal are trying to tune us into that with Moida Ani, with Elokei Neshama, in terms of coming to life. Asher Yotzar, that you say in the morning, just in terms of waking up in the morning and discovering, hey, I have a whole body. Let me experience that anew. But if we'll take what the Chavos HaVavos is trying to get us to, we can simply doing it through this thought process of imagining that we could have not been here and appreciating that. The Kuzari says that we have Shachiyanu, what we say periodically. The point of a bracha is to remind you that there's something here that could have not been. So when at every given point, there are certain landmarks in life or in the year, when you say Shachiyanu, I've made it to this point. Part of the point of the bracha is to tell you, wasn't a given. Note that something happened here that wasn't a given. Every landmark that you get to in life or in the year, since the last one, a number of people have dropped off the track. They're not here. So we can train ourselves to put ourselves through the mental processes of experiencing it in that way, of being able to think to ourselves, it's possible not to be alive. Not everybody is. Whenever I go to Beis HaKvaris, it hits me that way. Har HaMenuchos particularly. Beit Shemesh is flat. But Har HaMenuchos, you look around and you say to yourself, wow, I really am a privileged minority. Most people are dead. And you know what? Most people, I was once leaving Har HaMenuchos. I was standing at the bus stop. And someone drove by and offered me a ride out. So I said to him, we got an Ishur Yetziyah. Most people weren't allowed out. They have to stay. He looked at me, he didn't know what I wanted. He said, no, everybody here is leaving. So, halavai, that would be Tchiyas Mason. But no, most people have to stay behind. It's only very few people who are allowed out. Okay, a good tevach.